Disc 5.
Chapter 13. "I suppose it couldn't possibly have been the mayor," said Inspector Cornish wistfully. He tapped the paper with a list of names on it with his pencil. Dermot Craddock grinned. "Wishful thinking?" he asked. "You could certainly call it that," said Cornish. "Pompous, canting old hypocrite," he went on. "Everybody's got it in for him. Throws his weight about, ultra-sanctimonious, and neck-deep in graft for years past." "Can't you ever bring it home to him?" "No," said Cornish. "He's too slick for that. He's always just on the right side of the law."
"It's tempting, I agree," said Dermot Craddock. "But I think you'll have to banish that rosy picture from your mind, Frank."
I know," said Cornish. "He's a possible, but a wildly improbable. Who else have we got?" Both men studied the list again. There were still 8 names on it.
"We're pretty well agreed," said Craddock, "that there's nobody missed out from here."
There was a faint question in his voice. Cornish answered it.
"I think you can be pretty sure that's the lot. After Mrs. Bantry came the vicar, and after that the Badcocks. There were then 8 people on the stairs. The mayor and his wife, Joshua Grice and wife from Lower Farm, Donald McNeil of the Much Benham Herald and Argus, Ardwick Fenn, USA, Miss Lola Brewster, USA, moving picture star. There you are. In addition, there was an arty photographer from London with a camera set up on the angle of the stairs. If, as you suggest, this Mrs. Bantry's story of Marina Gregg having a frozen look was occasioned by someone she saw on the stairs, you've got to take your pick among that lot. Mayor, regretfully, out. Grice's out. Never been away from St. Mary Mead, I should say. That leaves 4. Local journalist, unlikely. Photographer girl had been there for 30 minutes already, so why should Marina react so late in the day? What does that leave?"
"Sinister strangers from America," said Craddock with a faint smile. "You've said it."
"They're our best suspects by far, I agree," said Craddock. "They turned up unexpectedly. Ardwick Fenn was an old flame of Marina's whom she'd not seen for years. Lola Brewster was once married to Marina Gregg's 3rd husband, who got a divorce from her in order to marry Marina. It was not, I gather, a very amicable divorce."
"I'd put her down as suspect number 1, said Cornish. "Would you, Frank? After a lapse of about 15 years or so, and having remarried twice herself since then?"
Cornish said that you never knew with women. Dermot accepted that as a general dictum, but remarked that it seemed odd to him, to say the least of it.
"But you agree that it lies between them?"
"Possibly, but I don't like it very much. What about the hired help who were serving the drinks?"
"Discounting the frozen look we've heard so much about? Well, we've checked up in a general way. Local catering firm from Market Basing had the job, for the fate, I mean. Actually, in the house, there was the butler, Giuseppe, in charge, and 2 local girls from the studio's canteen. I know both of them. Not over bright, but harmless. Pushing it back at me, are you? I'll go and have a word with the reporter chap. He might have seen something helpful. Then to London, Ardwick Fenn, Lola Brewster, and the photographer girl, what's her name? Margot Bence. She also might have seen something." Cornish nodded. "Lola Brewster is my best bet," he said.
He looked curiously at Craddock.
"You don't seem as sold on her as I am."
"I'm thinking of the difficulties," said Dermot slowly.
"Difficulties?"
"Of putting poison into Marina's glass without anybody seeing her."
"Well, that's the same for everybody, isn't it? It was a mad thing to do."
"Agreed it was a mad thing to do, but it would be a madder thing for someone like Lola Brewster than for anyone else."
"Why?" asked Cornish. because she was a guest of importance. She's a somebody, a big name. Everyone would be looking at her.
True enough, Cornish admitted. The locals would nudge each other and whisper and stare. And after Marina Gregg and Jason Rudd had greeted her, she'd have been passed on for the secretaries to look after. It wouldn't have been easy, Frank. However adroit you were, you couldn't be sure someone wouldn't see you. That's the snag there, and it's a big snag.
Well, as I say, isn't that snag the same for everybody?
No, said Craddock. Oh, no, far from it. Oh, take the butler now, Giuseppe.
He's busy with the drinks and glasses, with pouring things out, with handing them. He could put a pinch or a tablet or two of Calmo in a glass easily enough.
Giuseppe, Frank Cornish reflected. Do you think he did?
No reason to believe so, said Craddock. But we might find a reason. A nice solid bit of motive, that is to say. Yes, he could have done it. Or one of the catering staff could have done it. Unfortunately, they weren't on the spot. A pity. Someone might have managed to get himself or herself deliberately planted in the firm for the purpose.
You mean it might have been as premeditated as all that?
We don't know anything about it yet, said Craddock vexedly. We absolutely don't know the first thing about it. Not until we can prize what we want to know out of Marina Gregg, or out of her husband. They must know, or suspect, but they're not telling. And we don't know yet why they're not telling. We've got a long way to go. He paused and then resumed. Discounting the frozen look, which may have been pure coincidence, there are other people who could have done it fairly easily. The secretary woman, Ella Zielinski. She was also busy with glasses, with handing things to people. Nobody would be watching her with any particular interest. The same applies to that willow wand of a young man. I've forgotten his name. Haley Preston? That's right. There would have been a good opportunity for either of them. In fact, if either of them had wanted to do away with Marina Gregg, it would have been far safer to do so on a public occasion. Anyone else?
Well, there's always the husband, said Craddock.
Back to the husbands again, said Cornish with a faint smile. We thought it was that poor devil Badcock before we realized that Marina was the intended victim. Now we've transferred our suspicions to Jason Rudd. He seems devoted enough, though, I must say.
He has the reputation of being so, said Craddock, but one never knows.
If he wanted to get rid of her, wouldn't divorce be much easier?
It would be far more usual, agreed Dermot, but there may be lots of ins and outs to this business that we don't know yet.
The telephone rang. Cornish took up the receiver.
What?
Yeah? Put them through. Yes, he's here. He listened for a moment, then put his hand over the receiver and looked at Dermot. Miss Marina Gregg, he said, is feeling very much better. She's quite ready to be interviewed.
I'd better hurry along, said Dermot Craddock, before she changes her mind.
At Gossington Hall, Dermot Craddock was received by Ella Zielinski. She was, as usual, brisk and efficient.
Miss Gregg is waiting for you, Mr. Craddock, she said.
Dermot looked at her with some interest. From the beginning, he had found Ella Zielinski an intriguing personality. He had said to himself, a poker face, if ever I saw one. She had answered any questions he had asked with the utmost readiness. She had shown no signs of keeping anything back, but what she really thought or felt or even knew about the business, he still had no idea. There seemed to be no chink in the armour of her bright efficiency. She might know more than she said she did. She might know a good deal. The only thing he was sure of, and he had to admit to himself that he had no reasons to adduce for that surety, was that she was in love with Jason Rudd. It was, as he had said, an occupational disease of secretaries. It probably meant nothing. But the fact did at least suggest a motive, and he was sure, quite sure, that she was concealing something. It might be love, it might be hate. It might, quite simply, be guilt. She might have taken her opportunity that afternoon, or she might have deliberately planned what she was going to do. He could see her in the part quite easily as far as the execution of it went. Her swift but unhurried movements, moving here and there, looking after guests, handing glasses to one or another, taking glasses away, her eyes marking the spot where Marina had put her glass down on the table. And then, perhaps at the very moment when Marina had been greeting the arrivals from the States with surprise and joyous cries, and everybody's eyes turned towards their meeting, she could have quietly and unobtrusively dropped the fatal dose into that glass. It would require audacity, nerve, swiftness. She would have had all those. Whatever she had done, she would not have looked guilty whilst she was doing it. It would have been a simple, brilliant crime, a crime that could hardly fail to be successful. But chance had ruled otherwise. In the rather crowded floor space, someone had joggled Heather Badcock's arm. Her drink had been spilt, and Marina, with her natural, impulsive grace, had quickly proffered her own glass, standing there untouched. And so the wrong woman had died. A lot of pure theory, and probably hooey at that, said Dermot Craddock to himself, at the same time as he was making polite remarks to Ella Zielinski. One thing I wanted to ask you, Miss Zielinski. The catering was done by a market-basing firm, I understand.
Yes.
Why was that particular firm chosen?
Why, I really don't know, said Ella. That doesn't lie amongst my duties. I know Mr. Rudd thought it would be more tactful to employ somebody local rather than to employ a firm from London. And the whole thing was really quite a small affair from our point of view.
Quite. He watched her as she stood frowning a little and looking down. A good forehead, a determined chin, a figure which could look quite voluptuous if it was allowed to do so, a hard mouth, an acquisitive mouth, the eyes... He looked at them in surprise. The lids were reddened. He wondered, had she been crying? It looked like it. And yet he could have sworn she was not the type of young woman to cry. She looked up at him, and as though she read his thoughts, she took out her handkerchief and blew her nose heartily.
You've got a cold, he said.
Not a cold. It's hay fever. It's an allergy of some kind, really. I always get it this time of year. There was a low buzz. There were two phones in the room, one on the table and one on another table in the corner. It was the latter one that was beginning to buzz. Ella Zielinski went over to it and picked up the receiver.
Yes, she said. He's here. I'll bring him up at once.
She put the receiver down again.
Marina's ready for you, she said.
Marina Gregg received Craddock in a room on the first floor, which was obviously her own private sitting room opening out of her bedroom. After the accounts of her prostration and her nervous state, Dermot Craddock had expected to find a fluttering invalid, but although Marina was half reclining on a sofa, her voice was vigorous and her eyes were bright. She had very little makeup on, but in spite of this, she did not look her age, and he was struck very forcibly by the subdued radiance of her beauty. It was the exquisite line of cheek and jawbone, the way the hair fell loosely and naturally to frame her face, the long sea-green eyes, the pencilled eyebrows, owing something to art but more to nature, and the warmth and sweetness of her smile, all had a subtle magic. She said, "Chief Inspector Craddock, I've been behaving disgracefully. I do apologize. I just let myself go to pieces after this awful thing. I could have snapped out of it, but I didn't. I am ashamed of myself."
The smile came, rueful, sweet, turning up the corners of the mouth. She extended a hand, and he took it. "It was only natural," he said, "that you should feel upset." "Well, everyone was upset," said Marina. "I'd no business to make out it was worse for me than anyone else. Hadn't you?" She looked at him for a minute, and then nodded. "Yes," she said. "You're very perceptive." "Yes, I had." She looked down, and with one long forefinger gently stroked the arm of the sofa. It was a gesture he had noticed in one of her films. It was a meaningless gesture, yet it seemed fraught with significance. It had a kind of musing gentleness. "I'm a coward," she said, her eyes still cast down. "Somebody wanted to kill me, and I didn't want to die." "Why do you think someone wanted to kill you?" Her eyes opened wide. "Because it was my glass. My drink that had been tampered with. It was just a mistake that poor stupid woman got it. That's what's so horrible and so tragic. Besides..." "Yes, Miss Gregg?" She seemed a little uncertain about saying more. "You had other reasons, perhaps, for believing that you were the intended victim?" She nodded. "What reasons, Miss Gregg?" She paused a minute longer before saying, "Jason says I must tell you all about it."
"You've confided in him, then?"
"Yes. I didn't want to at first, but Dr. Gilchrist put it to me that I must. And then I found that he thought so, too. He'd thought it all along, but it's rather funny, really."
Rueful smile curled her lips again.
"He didn't want to alarm me by telling me." "Really?" Marina sat up with a sudden vigorous movement. "Darling Jinx, does he think I'm a complete fool?"
"You haven't told me yet, Miss Gregg, why you should think anyone wanted to kill you."
She was silent for a moment, and then with a sudden brusque gesture, she stretched out for her handbag, opened it, took out a piece of paper, and thrust it into his hand. He read it. Typed on it was one line of writing. "Don't think you'll escape next time." Craddock said sharply, "When did you get this?" "It was on my dressing table when I came back from the bath." "So someone in the house..." "Not necessarily. Someone could have climbed up the balcony outside my window and pushed it through there. I think they meant it to frighten me still more, but actually it didn't. I just felt furiously angry and sent word to you to come and see me."
Dermot Craddock smiled. "Possibly a rather unexpected result for whoever sent it. Is this the first kind of message like that you've had?"
Again, Marina hesitated. Then she said, "No, it isn't."
"Will you tell me about any other?"
"It was 3 weeks ago when we first came here. It came to the studio, not here. It was quite ridiculous. It was just a message, not typewritten that time, in capital letters. It said, 'Prepare to die.'" She laughed. Perhaps there was a very faint tinge of hysteria in the laugh. The mirth was genuine enough. "It was so silly," she said. "Of course, one often gets crank messages, threats, things like that. I thought it was probably religious, you know. Someone who didn't approve of film actresses. I just tore it up and threw it into the waste paper basket."
"Did you tell anyone about it, Miss Gregg?"
Marina shook her head. "No, I never said a word to anyone. As a matter of fact, we were having a bit of worry at the moment about the scene we were shooting. I just couldn't have thought of anything but that at the moment. Anyway, as I say, I thought it was either a silly joke or one of those religious cranks who write and disapprove of play acting and things like that."
"And after that, was there another?"
"Yes. On the day of the fete. One of the gardeners brought it to me, I think. He said someone had left a note for me, and was there any answer? I thought perhaps it had to do with the arrangements. I just tore it open. It said, "Today will be your last day on Earth." I just crumpled it up and said, "No answer." Then I called the man back and asked him who gave it him. He said it was a man with spectacles on a bicycle. Well, I mean, what could you think about that? I thought it was more silliness. I didn't think for a moment it was a real genuine threat. Where's that note now, Miss Gregg? Well, I have no idea. I was wearing one of those coloured Italian silk coats, and I think, as far as I remember, that I crumpled it up and shoved it into the pocket of it. But it's not there now. It probably fell out. And you've no idea who wrote these silly notes, Miss Gregg? Who inspired them? Not even now? Her eyes opened widely. There was a kind of innocent wonder in them that he took note of. He admired it, but he did not believe in it. Well, how can I tell? How can I possibly tell? I think you might have quite a good idea, Miss Gregg. I haven't. I assure you I haven't. You're a very famous person, said Dermot. You've had great successes. Successes in your profession, and personal successes too. Men have fallen in love with you, wanted to marry you, have married you. Women have been jealous and envied you. Men have been in love with you and been rebuffed by you. It's a pretty wide field, I agree, but I should think you must have some idea who could have written these notes. It could have been anybody. No, Miss Gregg, it couldn't have been anybody. It could possibly have been one of quite a lot of people. It could be someone quite humble, a dresser, an electrician, a servant. Or it could be someone among the ranks of your friends, or so-called friends. But you must have some idea, some name, more than one name, perhaps, to suggest. The door opened and Jason Rudd came in. Marina turned to him. She swept out an arm appealingly. "Jinx, darling, Mr. Craddock is insisting that I must know who wrote those horrid notes, and I don't. You know I don't. Neither of us knows. We haven't got the least idea." Very urgent about that, thought Craddock. Very urgent. Is Marina Gregg afraid of what her husband might say? Jason Rudd, his eyes dark with fatigue and the scowl on his face deeper than usual, came over to join them. He took Marina's hand in his.
"I know it sounds unbelievable to you, Inspector," he said, "but honestly, neither Marina nor I have any idea about this business."
"So you're in the happy position of having no enemies, is that it?" The irony was manifest in Dermot's voice. Jason Rudd flushed a little.
"Enemies? That's a very biblical word, Inspector. In that sense, I can assure you, I can think of no enemies. People who dislike one, would like to get the better of one, would do a mean turn to one if they could, in malice and uncharitableness, yes. But it's a long step from that to putting an overdose of poison in a drink."
"Just now, in speaking to your wife, I asked her who could have written or inspired those letters. She said she didn't know. But when we come to the actual action, it narrows it down. Somebody actually put the poison in that glass. And that's a fairly limited field, you know."
"I saw nothing," said Jason Rudd.
"I certainly didn't," said Marina. "Well, I mean, if I had seen anyone putting anything in my glass, I wouldn't have drunk the stuff, would I?" "I can't help believing, you know," said Dermot Craddock gently, "that you do know a little more than you're telling me." "It's not true," said Marina. "Tell him that it isn't true, Jason."
"I assure you," said Jason Rudd, "that I am completely and absolutely at a loss. The whole thing's fantastic." I might believe it was a joke that had somehow gone wrong, that had proved dangerous, done by a person who never dreamt that it would be dangerous. There was a slight question in his voice. Then he shook his head. No, I see that idea doesn't appeal to you. There's one more thing I should like to ask you, said Dermot Craddock. You remember Mr. and Mrs. Badcock's arrival, of course. They came immediately after the vicar. You greeted them, I understand, Miss Gregg, in the same charming way as you had received all your guests. But I am told by an eyewitness that immediately after greeting them, you looked over Mrs. Badcock's shoulder and that you saw something which seemed to alarm you. Is that true? And if so, what was it? Marina said quickly, Of course it isn't true. Alarm me? What should have alarmed me? Well, that's what we want to know, said Dermot Craddock patiently. My witness is very insistent on the point, you know. Who was your witness? What did he or she say she saw? You were looking at the staircase, said Dermot Craddock. There were people coming up the staircase. There was a journalist. There was Mr. Grice and his wife, elderly residents in this place. There was Mr. Ardwick Fenn, who had just arrived from the States, and there was Miss Lola Brewster. Was it the sight of one of those people that upset you, Miss Gregg? I tell you, I wasn't upset. She almost barked the words. And yet your attention wavered from greeting Mrs. Badcock. She had said something to you which you left unanswered because you were staring past her at something else. Marina Gregg took hold on herself. She spoke quickly and convincingly. Look, I can explain, I really can. If you knew anything about acting, you'd be able to understand quite easily. There comes a moment, even when you know a part well, in fact, it usually happens when you do know a part well, when you go on with it mechanically, smiling, making the proper movements and gestures, saying the words with the usual inflections. But your mind isn't on it. And quite suddenly, there's a horrible blank moment when you don't know where you are, where you've got to in the play, what your next lines are. Drying up, that's what we call it. Well, that's what happened to me. I'm not terribly strong, as my husband will tell you. I've had rather a strenuous time and a good deal of nervous apprehension about this film. I wanted to make a success of this fate and to be nice and pleasant and welcoming to everybody. But one does say the same things over and over again, mechanically, to the people who are always saying the same things to you. You know, how they've always wanted to meet you, how they once saw you outside a theater in San Francisco, or traveled in a plane with you. It was something silly, really, but one has to be nice about it, and say things. Well, as I'm telling you, one does that automatically. One doesn't need to think what to say, because one said it so often before. Suddenly, I think, a wave of tiredness came over me. My brain went blank. Then I realized that Mrs. Badcock had been telling me a long story which I hadn't really heard at all, and was now looking at me in an eager sort of way, and that I hadn't answered her or said any of the proper things. It was just tiredness. Just tiredness, said Dermot Craddock slowly. You insist on that, Miss Gregg?
Yes, I do. I can't see why you don't believe me.
Dermot Craddock turned towards Jason Rudd. Mr. Rudd, he said, I think you're more likely to understand my meaning than your wife is. I am concerned, very much concerned, for your wife's safety. There has been an attempt on her life. There have been threatening letters. That means, doesn't it, that there is someone who was here on the day of the fate, and possibly is still here, someone in very close touch with this house and what goes on in it. That person, whoever it is, may be slightly insane.
It's not just a question of threats. Threatened men live long, as they say. The same goes for women. But whoever it was didn't stop at threats. A deliberate attempt was made to poison Miss Gregg. Don't you see in the whole nature of things that the attempt is bound to be repeated? There's only one way to achieve safety. That is to give me all the clues you possibly can. I don't say that you know who that person is, but I think that you must be able to give a guess or to have a vague idea. Won't you tell me the truth? Or if, which is possible, you yourself do not know the truth, won't you urge your wife to do so? It's in the interest of her own safety that I'm asking you. Jason Rudd turned his head slowly. You hear what Inspector Craddock says, Marina, he said. It's possible, as he says, that you may know something that I do not. If so, for God's sake, don't be foolish about it. If you've the least suspicion of anyone, tell it to us now.
But I haven't.
Her voice rose in a wail. You must believe me. Who were you afraid of that day? Asked Dermot.
I wasn't afraid of anyone.
Listen, Miss Gregg. Of the people on the stairs or coming up it, there were two friends whom you were surprised to see, whom you had not seen for a long time, and whom you did not expect to see that day. Mr. Ardwick Fenn and Miss Brewster. Had you any special emotions when you suddenly saw them coming up the stairs? You didn't know they were coming, did you?
No. We'd no idea they were even in England, said Jason Rudd.
I was delighted, said Marina, absolutely delighted.
Delighted to see Miss Brewster?
Well,
she shot him a quick, faintly suspicious glance. Craddock said, Lola Brewster was, I believe, originally married to your third husband, Robert Truscott.
Yes, that's so.
He divorced her in order to marry you.
Oh, everyone knows that, said Marina Gregg impatiently. You needn't think it's anything you've found out. There was a bit of a rumpus at the time, but there wasn't any bad feeling about it in the end.
Did she make threats against you?
Well, in a way, yes. But, oh dear, I wish I could explain. No one takes those sort of threats seriously. It was at a party. She'd had a lot to drink. Well, she might have taken a pot shot at me with a pistol if she'd had one, but luckily she didn't. All that was years ago. None of these things last, these emotions. They don't. Really, they don't. That's true, isn't it, Jason?
I'd say it was true enough, said Jason Rudd. And I can assure you, Mr. Craddock, that Lola Brewster had no opportunity on the day of the fate of poisoning my wife's drink. I was close beside her most of the time. The idea that Lola would suddenly, after a long period of friendliness, come to England and arrive at our house all prepared to poison my wife's drink, why, the whole idea is absurd.
Well, I appreciate your point of view, said Craddock.
It's not only that, it's a matter of fact as well. She was nowhere near Marina's glass.
And your other visitor, Ardwick Fenn? There was, he thought, a very slight pause before Jason Rudd spoke.
He's a very old friend of ours, he said. We haven't seen him for a good many years now, though we occasionally correspond. He's quite a big figure in American television.
Was he an old friend of yours, too? Dermot Craddock asked Marina. Her breath came rather quickly as she replied, But yes, oh yes. He was quite a friend of mine, always. But I've rather lost sight of him of late years. Then, with a sudden, quick rush of words, she went on, And if you think that I looked up and saw Ardwick and was frightened of him, it's nonsense, absolute nonsense. Why should I be frightened of him? What reason would I have to be frightened of him? We were great friends. I was just very, very pleased when I suddenly saw him. It was a delightful surprise, as I told you. Yes, a delightful surprise. She raised her head, looking at him, her face vivid and defiant. Thank you, Miss Gregg, said Craddock quietly. If you should feel inclined at any moment to take me a little further into your confidence, I should strongly advise you to do so. Chapter 14. Mrs. Bantry was on her knees. A good day for hoeing, nice dry soil. But hoeing wouldn't do everything. Thistles now, and dandelions. She dealt vigorously with these pests. She rose to her feet, breathless but triumphant, and looked out over the hedge onto the road. She was faintly surprised to see the dark-haired secretary, whose name she couldn't remember, coming out of the public call-box that was situated near the bus stop on the other side of the road. What was her name now? It began with a B, or was it an R? No, Zielinski, that was it. Mrs. Bantry remembered just in time, as Ella crossed the road into the drive past the lodge. "Good morning, Miss Zielinski," she called in a friendly tone. Ella Zielinski jumped. It was not so much a jump as a shy, the shy of a frightened horse. It surprised Mrs. Bantry. "Good morning," said Ella, and added quickly, "I came down to telephone. There's something wrong with our line today." Mrs. Bantry felt more surprise. She wondered why Ella Zielinski bothered to explain her action. She responded civilly. Well, how annoying for you. Do come in and telephone any time you want to. Oh, thank you very much. Ella was interrupted by a fit of sneezing. You've got hay fever, said Mrs. Bantry with immediate diagnosis. Try weak bicarbonate of soda and water. Oh, that's all right. I have some very good patent stuff and an atomizer. Thank you all the same. She sneezed again as she moved away, walking briskly up the drive. Mrs. Bantry looked after her. Then her eyes returned to her garden. She looked at it in a dissatisfied fashion. Not a weed to be seen anywhere. Othello's occupation's gone, Mrs. Bantry murmured to herself confusedly. I dare say I'm a nosy old woman, but I would like to know if... A moment of irresolution, and then Mrs. Bantry yielded to temptation. She was going to be a nosy old woman, and the hell with it. She strode indoors to the telephone, lifted the receiver, and dialed it. A brisk transatlantic voice spoke. Garsington Hall? This is Mrs. Bantry at the East Lodge. Oh, good morning, Mrs. Bantry. This is Haley Preston. I met you on the day of the fete. What can I do for you? I thought perhaps I could do something for you. If your telephone's out of order... His astonished voice interrupted her. Our telephone out of order? There's been nothing wrong with it. Why did you think so? I must have made a mistake, said Mrs. Bantry. I don't always hear very well, she explained unblushingly. She put the receiver back, waited a minute, and then dialed once more. Jane? Dolly here? Yes, Dolly, what is it? Well, it seems rather odd. The secretary woman was dialing from a public call box in the road. She took the trouble to explain to me, quite unnecessarily, that she was doing so because the line at Gossington Hall was out of order. But I've rung up there, and it isn't. She paused and waited for intelligence to pronounce. Indeed, said Miss Marple thoughtfully. Interesting. For what reason, do you think? Well, clearly, she didn't want to be overheard. Exactly. And there might be quite a number of reasons for that. Yes. Interesting, said Miss Marple again. Nobody could have been more ready to talk than Donald McNeil. He was an amiable, red-headed young man.
He greeted Dermot Craddock with pleasure and curiosity. "How are you getting along?" he asked cheerfully. "Got any special tidbit from me?" "Not as yet. Later, perhaps. Stalling as usual. You're all the same. Affable oysters." "Haven't you come to the stage yet of inviting someone to come and assist you in your inquiries?" "I've come to you," said Dermot Craddock with a grin. "Is there a nasty double entendre in that remark? Are you really suspicious that I murdered Heather Badcock, and do you think I did it in mistake for Marina Gregg, or that I meant to murder Heather Badcock all the time?" "I haven't suggested anything," said Craddock. "No, no, you wouldn't do that, would you? You'd be very correct. All right, let's go into it. I was there. I had opportunity, but had I any motive? Ah, that's what you'd like to know. What was my motive? I haven't been able to find one so far," said Craddock. "Well, that's very gratifying. I feel safer. I'm just interested in what you may have seen that day." "You've had that already. The local police had that straight away. It's humiliating. There I was on the scene of a murder. Practically saw the murder committed. Must have done. And yet I've no idea who did it. I'm ashamed to confess that the first I knew about it was seeing the poor dear woman sitting on a chair gasping for breath and then pegging out. Of course, it made a very good eyewitness account. It was a good scoop for me and all that. But I'll confess to you, I feel humiliated that I don't know more. I ought to know more. And you can't kid me that the dose was meant for Heather Badcock. She was a nice woman who talked too much, but nobody gets murdered for that. Unless, of course, they give away secrets. But I don't think anybody would ever have told Heather Badcock a secret. She wasn't the kind of woman who'd have been interested in other people's secrets. My view of her is of a woman who invariably talked about herself." "That seems to be the generally accepted view," agreed Craddock. "So we come to the famous Marina Gregg. I'm sure there are lots of wonderful motives for murdering Marina. Envy and jealousy and love tangles, all the stuff of drama. But who did it? Someone with a screw loose, I presume. There. You've had my valuable opinion. Is that what you wanted?" "Not that alone. I understand that you arrived and came up the stairs about the same time as the vicar and the mayor." "Quite correct. But that wasn't the first time I'd arrived. I'd been there earlier." "I didn't know that." "Yes. I was on a kind of roving commission, you know, going here and there. I had a photographer with me. I'd gone down to take a few local shots of the mayor arriving and throwing a hoopla and putting in a peg for buried treasure and that kind of thing. Then I went back up again, not so much on the job as to get a drink or two. The drink was good." "I see. Now, can you remember who else was on the staircase when you went up?" "Margot Bence from London was there with her camera." "You know her well?" "Oh, I just run against her quite often. She's a clever girl who makes a success of her stuff. She takes all the fashionable things, first nights, gala performances, specializes in photographs from unusual angles. Arty. She was in a corner of the half-landing, very well placed for taking anyone who came up and for taking the greetings going on at the top. Lola Brewster was just ahead of me on the stairs. Didn't know her at first. She's got a new rust-red hairdo. Very latest Fiji Islander type. Last time I saw her, it was lank waves falling round her face and chin in a nice shade of auburn. There was a big, dark man with her, American. I don't know who he was, but it looked important. Did you look at Marina Gregg herself at all as you were coming up?" "Well, yes, of course I did." "She didn't look upset or as though she'd had a shock or was frightened." "It's odd you should say that. I did think for a moment or two she was going to faint." "I see," said Craddock thoughtfully. "Thanks. There's nothing else you'd like to tell me?" MacNeil gave him a wide, innocent stare. What could there be?
I don't trust you, said Craddock.
But you seem quite sure I didn't do it. Disappointing.
Suppose I turn out to be our first husband? Nobody knows who he was, except that he was so insignificant that even his name's been forgotten.
Dermot grinned. Married from your prep school, he asked. Or possibly in rompers? I must hurry. I've got a train to catch.
There was a neatly docketed pile of papers on Craddock's desk at New Scotland Yard. He gave a perfunctory glance through them, then threw a question over his shoulder.
Where's Lola Brewster staying?
At the Savoy, sir. Suite 1800. She's expecting you.
And Ardwick Fenn?
He's at the Dorchester, first floor, 190.
Good.
He picked up some cablegrams and read through them again, before shoving them into his pocket. He smiled a moment to himself over the last one.
Don't say I don't do my stuff, Aunt Jane, he murmured under his breath.
He went out and made his way to the Savoy. In Lola Brewster's suite, Lola went out of her way to welcome him effusively. With the report he had just read in his mind, he studied her carefully. Quite a beauty still, he thought, in a lush kind of way. What you might call a trifle overblown, perhaps, but still they liked them that way. A completely different type, of course, from Marina Gregg. The amenities over, Lola pushed back her Fiji Islander hair, drew her generous lipsticked mouth into a provocative pout, and flickering blue eyelids over wide brown eyes said,
Have you come to ask me a lot more horrible questions? Like that local inspector did?
I hope they won't be too horrible, Miss Brewster.
Oh, but I am sure they will be, and I am sure the whole thing must have been some terrible mistake.
Do you really think so?
Yes, it's all such nonsense. Do you really mean that someone tried to poison Marina?
Who on earth would poison Marina? She's an absolute sweetie, you know. Everybody loves her.
Including you? I have always been devoted to Marina.
Oh, come now, Miss Brewster. Wasn't there a little trouble about 11 or 12 years ago?
All that. Lola waved it away. I was terribly nervy and distraught, and Rob and I had been having the most frightful quarrels. We were neither of us normal at the moment. Marina just fell wildly in love with him and rushed him off his feet, the poor pet.
And you minded very much?
Well, I thought I did, Inspector. Of course I see now it was one of the best things that ever happened to me. I was really worried about the children, you know, breaking up our home. I am afraid I'd already realized that Rob and I were incompatible. I expect, you know, I got married to Eddie Groves as soon as the divorce went through. I think, really, I'd been in love with him for a long time, but, of course, I didn't want to break up my marriage because of the children. It's so important, isn't it, that children should have a home. Yet people say that, actually, you were terribly upset.
Oh, people always say things, said Lola vaguely.
You said quite a lot, didn't you, Miss Brewster? You went about threatening to shoot Marina Gregg, or so I understand.
Look, I told you, one says things. One's supposed to say things like that.
Of course I wouldn't really shoot anyone.
In spite of taking a pot shot at Eddie Grove some few years later...
Ah, oh, that was because we had an argument, said Lola. I lost my temper.
I have it on very good authority, Miss Brewster, that you said, and these are your exact words, or so I'm told, he read from a notebook, that bitch needn't think she'll get away with it. If I don't shoot her now, I'll wait and get her in some other way. I don't care how long I wait, years if need be, but I'll get even with her in the end.
Oh, I'm sure I never said anything of the kind, Lola laughed.
I'm sure, Miss Brewster, that you did.
People exaggerate so. A charming smile broke over her face. I was just mad at the moment, you know, she murmured confidentially. One says all sorts of things when one's mad with people. But you don't really think I'd wait 14 years and come across to England and look up Marina and drop some deadly poison into her cocktail glass within 3 minutes of seeing her again? Dermot Craddock didn't really think so. It seemed to him wildly improbable. He merely said, I'm only pointing out to you, Miss Brewster, that there have been threats in the past, and that Marina Gregg was certainly startled and frightened to see someone who came up the stairs that day. Naturally, one feels that that someone must have been you. But, darling, Marina was delighted to see me. She kissed me and exclaimed how wonderful it was. Oh, really, Inspector, I do think you are being very, very silly. In fact, you were all one big happy family. Well, that's really much more true than all the things you've been thinking. And you've no ideas that could help us in any way? No ideas who might have tried to kill her? Oh, I tell you, nobody would have wanted to kill Marina. She's a very silly woman, anyway, always making terrible fusses about her health and changing her mind and wanting this, that, and the other, and when she's got it, being dissatisfied with it. I can't think why people are as fond of her as they are. Jason's always been absolutely mad about her. What that man has to put up with. But there it is. Everybody puts up with Marina, puts themselves out for her. Then she gives them a sad, sweet smile and thanks them. And apparently that makes them feel that all the trouble is worthwhile. I really don't know how she does it. You'd better put the idea that somebody wanted to kill her right out of your head. I should like to, said Dermot Craddock. Unfortunately, I can't put it out of my head, because, you see, it happened. What do you mean, it happened? Nobody has killed Marina, have they? No, but the attempt was made. I don't believe it for a moment. I expect whoever it was meant to kill the other woman all the time, the one who was killed. I expect someone comes into money when she dies. She hadn't any money, Miss Brewster. Oh, well, there was some other reason. Anyway, I shouldn't worry about Marina if I were you. Marina is always all right. Is she? She doesn't look a very happy woman to me. Oh, that's because she makes such a song and dance about everything. Unhappy love affairs, not being able to have any children. She adopted some children, didn't she? Said Dermot, with a lively remembrance of Miss Marple's urgent voice. I believe she did once. It wasn't a great success, I believe. She does these impulsive things, and then wishes she hadn't. What happened to the children she adopted? I've no idea. They just sort of vanished after a bit. She got tired of them, I suppose, like everything else. I see, said Dermot Craddock. Next, the Dorchester, Suite 190.
Well, Chief Inspector, Arduk Fenn looked down at the card in his hand.
Craddock.
What can I do for you?
I hope you won't mind if I ask you a few questions.
Not at all. It's this business at Much Benham. Now, what's the actual name? St. Mary Mead?
Yes, that's right, Gossington Hall.
Can't think what Jason Rudd wanted to buy a place like that for. Plenty of good Georgian houses in England, or even Queen Anne. Gossington Hall is a purely Victorian mansion. What's the attraction in that, I wonder?
Oh, there's some attraction. For some people, that is, in Victorian stability.
Stability? Well, perhaps you've got something there. Marina, I suppose, had a feeling for stability. It's a thing she never had herself, poor girl, so I suppose that's why she always covets it. Perhaps this place will satisfy her for a bit.
You know her well, Mr. Fenn? Ardwick Fenn shrugged his shoulders. "Well, I don't know that I'd say that. I've known her over a long period of years. Known her off and on, that is to say."
Craddock looked at him appraisingly. A dark man, heavily built, shrewd eyes behind thick glasses, heavy jowl and chin. Ardwick Fenn went on.
"The idea is, I gather from what I read in the newspapers, that this Mrs. whatever her name was poisoned by mistake. That the dose was intended for Marina, is that right?"
"Yes, that's it. The dose was in Marina Gregg's cocktail. Mrs. Badcock spilled hers, and Marina handed over her drink to her."
"Well, that seems pretty conclusive. I really can't think, though, who would want to poison Marina, especially as Lynette Brown wasn't there."
"Lynette Brown?" Craddock looked slightly at sea. Ardwick Fenn smiled.
"If Marina breaks this contract, throws up the part, Lynette will get it. And it would mean a good deal to Lynette to get it. But for all that, I don't imagine she'd send some emissary along with poison. Much too melodramatic an idea."
"It seems a little far-fetched," said Dermot dryly.
"Ah, you'd be surprised what women will do when they're ambitious," said Ardwick Fenn. "Mind you, death mayn't have been intended. It may have been just to give her a fright. Enough to knock her out, but not to finish her."
Craddock shook his head. "It wasn't a borderline dose," he said.
"Well, people make mistakes in doses. Quite big ones."
"Is this really your theory?"
"Oh, no, it isn't. It was only a suggestion. I've no theory. I was only an innocent bystander."
"Was Marina Gregg very surprised to see you?"
"Yes, it was a complete surprise to her." He laughed amusedly. "Just couldn't believe her eyes when she saw me coming up the stairs. She gave me a very nice welcome, I must say."
"You hadn't seen her for a long time?"
"Not for 4 or 5 years, I should say."
"And some years before that, there was a time when you and she were very close friends, I believe."
"Are you insinuating anything in particular by that remark, Inspector Craddock?"
There was very little change in the voice, but there was something there that had not been there before. A hint of steel, of menace. Dermot felt suddenly that this man would be a very ruthless opponent.
"It would be as well, I think," said Ardwick Fenn, "that you said exactly what you do mean."
"I'm quite prepared to do so, Mr. Fenn. I have to inquire into the past relations of everyone who was there on that day with Marina Gregg. It seems to have been a matter of common gossip that at the time I have just referred to, you were wildly in love with Marina Gregg." Ardwick Fenn shrugged his shoulders.
"One has these infatuations, Inspector. Fortunately, they pass."
"It is said that she encouraged you, and that later she turned you down, and that you resented the fact."
"It is said. It is said. I suppose you read all that in Confidential."
"It has been told me by quite well-informed and sensible people." Ardwick Fenn threw back his head, showing the bull-like line of his neck.
"I had a yen for her at one time, yes," he admitted. "She was a beautiful and attractive woman, and still is. To say that I ever threatened her is going a little too far. I'm never pleased to be thwarted, Chief Inspector, and most people who thwart me tend to be sorry that they have done so. But that principle applies mainly in my business life."
"You did, I believe, use your influence to have her dropped from a picture that she was making."
Fenn shrugged his shoulders. "She was unsuitable for the role. There was conflict between her and the director. I had money in that picture, and I had no intention of jeopardizing it. It was, I assure you, purely a business transaction." But perhaps Marina Gregg did not think so?
Oh, naturally she did not think so. She would always think that anything like that was personal.
She actually told certain friends of hers that she was afraid of you, I believe.
Did she? How childish.
I expect she enjoyed the sensation. You think there was no need for her to be afraid of you?
Well, of course not. Whatever personal disappointment I might have had, I soon put it behind me. I've always gone on the principle that where women are concerned, there are as good fish in the sea as ever came out of it.
A very satisfactory way to go through life, Mr. Fenn.
Yes, I think it is.
You have a wide knowledge of the moving picture world?
I have financial interests in it.
And therefore you are bound to know a lot about it.
Perhaps.
You are a man whose judgment would be worth listening to. Can you suggest to me any person who is likely to have such a deep grudge against Marina Gregg that they would be willing to do away with her?
Probably a dozen, said Ardwick Fenn. That is to say, if they hadn't got to do anything about it personally. If it was a mere matter of pressing a button in a wall, I dare say there'd be a lot of willing fingers.
You were there that day. You saw her and talked to her. Do you think that amongst any of the people who were around you in that brief space of time, from when you arrived to the moment when Heather Badcock died, do you think that amongst them you can suggest, only suggest, mind you, I'm asking you for nothing more than a guess, anyone who might poison Marina Gregg?
I wouldn't like to say, said Ardwick Fenn.
That means that you have some idea.
It means that I have nothing to say on the subject. And that, Chief Inspector Craddock, is all you'll get out of me.
End of Disc 5.